True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. Thank you so much for being with us today. We're going to be talking again about Nancy Guthrie and a couple of new developments. I say new because anytime you have contact with law enforcement, with the media, I think we need to at least touch on it. Also, I wanted to touch on really looking again at who would gain from this. And then finally, I wanted to talk with each of you to get your feedback, your questions, your comments. I think there was a snafu in the time and people might think this is on at 11. So I'm a little bit concerned because I saw there was a glitch from 11 to 10. Back to 11 to 10. Anyway, we try to always come on at 10. So I truly apologize if I've missed anybody because I know our lives in the morning are, it's such a great time to have so many of you on here. But I am concerned that initially it went out at 11, changed back to 10. And I'm hoping some of you got the notification because the lion's share of what I'm hoping to discuss today is what you all want to discuss, not what I want to discuss. But I did want to open it up and say that Sheriff Nanos, sorry, of course, this is about Nancy Guthrie. I wanted to say that Sheriff Nanos did come out in People. I read it this morning. And essentially, he has nothing new to answer. Or to say, he says it's really important that the public remain responsive, but there's no new insights, new evidence. Basically, talks about the waiting game and how long this is going to take. So nothing new evidentiary wise, nothing new for us to really look at. So unfortunately, the People Magazine article. And I love People. I mean, they were the first article that bought a story from me back during the Idaho 4 case. I really appreciate those editors, the people in charge in True Crime Area. They've been great. They definitely wanted to do a story. And it's hard to do a story when there's not a story, right? It's just hard to keep the rehash alive. That's why I wanted to hopefully accomplish two things today. One, just to get you up to date that there is nothing new. Secondarily, I wanted to talk to you specifically about who would have motive to take her. Not who didn't have motive. I've been going over that. The family's out. Let's move on. I'll keep rehashing that if anything new comes up regarding, you know, specific allegations by people on social media against the family, but I want to refocus as to who would really benefit from abducting Nancy. And when you look at that, it's pretty clear. This is somebody who I believe sought money. And again, we know Savannah Guthrie has money. And I believe this person knew that. Someone local, someone who had some nexus to Nancy and Savannah and wanted to benefit from that, wanted to exploit that financially. Initially, everything goes south. Maybe perhaps did not fully contemplate the medical risk factors involved in this abduction. Let's really think about that. That's very much an Occam's razor. If they really weren't attuned, we don't know how much research they did on her. I still believe they did a lot of research, but maybe they really thought because she gets around, she gets out, that, and you know, if they did surveillance on her, they'd see her driving. You know, she was well capable of driving. Maybe they did not really realize the risk factor involved in abducting an 84-year-old. That actually they thought she would hold on long enough for them to be able to obtain money. So just to go over this, number one, money. I still believe money and sort of disdain, hate, resentment for this family. And I make that second leap based on the fact that they went public. So money was shot to heck. Now you're looking at somebody who enjoys what they've done to them in the media, right? Going to the local stations, going to TMZ, the importance for them to be at the forefront of the narrative and the importance of them to continue to make the Guthrie family suffer. So when you look at all of that, that's who we're looking for. Somebody that's the gain. That's the purpose. Who would gain? Who would gain? I'm continuing to scrub social media because I think there could be clues there. I really do. You heard it here first. Actually, I had somebody contact me yesterday with a possible person, and I thought that was really interesting. So I'm going to take a dive into that. I do believe that he's watching it closely. Not only do I believe that, but every bona fide profiler on this case has said the same thing. They're watching it closely. They want to see if anybody's getting closer to finding them. And so I think it's very, very important to them to continue to watch social media. But I want to get to your questions today. I'm really excited about this. And so I'm hoping I've got some on Twitter, and then I want to go here too. All right, let's start up at the beginning. And I'm just going to address each one because I just want to say I truly appreciate each one of you being here in chat, joining us every day. We typically have somewhere between 2,000 and 4,000 in chat daily. Again, this time, not exactly sure what happened, but hopefully, several of you will join us. I just know I'm going to get all these, wait a minute, it said 11, and then I hope the notifications work right because that was erroneous time. I want to first of all thank Kara. I can tell she's a member. She's got all these cool emojis in. And so I want to thank Kara. She was worried about not being able to make it. So thank you so much for just caring enough to alert us that you might have otherwise have an issue come up and might not be able to make it. Thank you for coming, Windy, Ohio. I'm glad you are well and blessed. I think so many of us just count our blessings in cases like this, and that we read about Karen Cardwell, one of our, just one of my favorites on the feed, on our platform. She's just amazing, really tracking this case from the beginning. Thank you, Rosemary Morgan. Good morning to you. This is going to be fun. Okay, Rosemary Morgan has a comment too she'd like to make. And she says they need to get rid of Sheriff Nanos. And they may. Again, just to reiterate a couple of things, there's three avenues that people are trying to get rid of him, and all for different bases. The first one we knew about was the attempted recall election, right? They're trying to get him another election done. So it wouldn't get rid of him, but it would cause an election to happen again. So they would basically just do the whole re-election process all over again. I've talked a lot about that. They would need something in the area. I don't have my number in front of me. I've talked about it before, but like 122,000 votes, that would mean, 1,200 or more every day. You have to have people knocking on doors, getting those votes from legitimate people. So just to let you all know, I tracked and did a whole segment on this, how very improbable this is going to happen, because this happens all the time. They went after another Pima County sheriff. It's just too difficult to have the manpower to get that kind of numbers in the short amount of time. So I don't think you can look for the recall causing any problems. The other is the $2 million lawsuit, and that's certainly going to sidetrack Sheriff Nanos, and that's based on the lieutenant that ran against Sheriff Nanos and was the minute she said she was going to run, he put her on leave. He started 5 investigations against her. He ended up winning by about 400 and some odd votes. So a very small margin. And of course, I think it could be largely attributed to the fact that she was, you know, publicly put on leave under investigation. So people who didn't take that as or didn't know much about anything and saw, didn't understand the possible retaliation that was involved in that, could have thought that she was deserving of that. And oh my gosh, we can't have a sheriff who's under investigation. So anyway, she's going after him, but that's not going to affect whether he stays in or out of office. And in fact, I showed a memo. There was an outside investigative agency that was hired to look at just that. Did Sheriff Nanos do something retaliatory against her? And they determined yes, that in particularly in 2 areas, he absolutely was guilty at inappropriately going after her. But at the very last note in their report, and I've posted the report, we've talked about it in depth, in that report, it specifically says that because he's an elected official and not hired, they can do nothing about it. So that investigation is at a dead end and he will be facing the $2 million suit, but that's not going to have anything to do with whether he's going to serve out his last 2 years. Finally, the one that has a lot of teeth, everyone, is the supervisors board. And they went forward and asked for all sorts of information, everything from how he handles immigration and coordination with customs officials and border patrol officials to how he lied, according to them, on his application, even to be involved in law enforcement in Pima County. Allegations of him beating somebody to within an inch of their life, apparently, while the person was handcuffed in the back of his squad car with a flashlight, him, you know, not being honest about being, I think, 8 times suspended when he was an officer with El Paso and just kind of coming on to Pima County, keeping all that hidden. And Elizabeth Vargas interviewed one of the supervisors, one of the main supervisors, who said, listen, he's a doctor. And he said, listen, he gave a 22, Nanos gave a 22-page report back explaining different actions and why he did or didn't do things. They also wanted to dive into his retaliation against others on the force. Nevertheless, the supervisor on Vargas said, we're not pleased with what was determined or what he says happened. We're not making a determination yet. They're giving themselves time to put something together. But from everything I can glean, look out, Sheriff Nanos. They have the teeth to remove him, and it seems they have the will. Will that positively affect the case? It's going to be difficult on the case, whether he stays on or doesn't stay on. The case it's difficult, but thankfully the FBI is in a sense running the whole thing and is at the helm with that task force in large part, I believe. Let's see, moving on down. Oh, good morning, Massachusetts. Been spending a lot of time in Massachusetts. I'm going back soon. So Massachusetts, great to have you in the house. Let's see. I have a meeting at work at 9:30 Mountain Time, so I'll be able to catch the first 30 minutes. I'll watch the rest later. Looking forward to it, Jen. Thank you, Holly Locks. Always appreciate you here on the platform. And I love this opportunity to really engage with everybody. And I hope I hear from everybody on here that's tuning in today. I would love to hear your thoughts, good, bad, maybe it's just a high, but would love to hear from you. Sorry to hear she doesn't want to discuss this case. Who is that? Let's see. I definitely want to discuss the case. I'm going to keep discussing the case, hoping for questions, having this be a really interactive time frame. But I'm here to talk about Nancy And that's not going away. I want to have a place where you who are interested in the story, you can get different viewpoints, vantage points. We interview a lot of amazing guests and look at a lot of facts in the case. So we're definitely going to talk about the case, but I would like to address it from the questions you all have to ask. Holly says, I am so glad you're keeping Nancy's case alive. Look, I just have to tell you, I'm just determined because I saw this with Sebastian Rogers, where Sebastian Rogers, the case just such a horrible thing, what has happened in the Sebastian Rogers case. Nobody even knows who I'm talking about half the time when I say Sebastian Rogers. I tweet about it and no one cares, or, you know, half the time they just don't even know what I'm talking about. It's not that they don't care. And that happened, you know, we're at, I think, the 3-year mark for Sebastian since he went missing. I think that's right. It's just awful. It's just awful. And I just don't want to have that happen to Nancy, because I think it becomes, so this one's a little different because the FBI is so entrenched and there's a task force and everything. And this certainly has more notoriety than Sebastian. But at one point when Sebastian went missing for about the first year and a half, he was the most publicized missing child. And now people don't even know who I'm talking about. So I'm just committed to keeping her name in the news and to providing you guys updates and details, definitely. Let me see, moving on. Let's see. Okay, here we go. Thank you to all my mods. I don't get to say it enough, but thank you all for really everything you do to help this channel and to interact with our guests. I can tell you, there just are no better mods. Their conviction to the family, their conviction to the channel and to Nancy and to Truth on whatever case we cover. So thank you, mods. Savannah's next husband. All right, you're right, Sherry. I promised a show about that, and I'm going to keep my promise. We are now through. If you want to go back and look, we've done Annie in a deep dive. Cameron, we did yesterday. We've done Tommaso deep dive. We did a deep dive about Savannah Guthrie. In other words, looking at their motive, no motive, information, all the information we have, a kind of a historical background on the person, and just deep diving. Would they, did they, could they be responsible? The person I have not done yet is Savannah's ex-husband or his or her current husband. I have looked into this ex-husband and we're going to talk more about it. And of course, it's kind of interesting, right? Because if you look at the Tepes, you know, a lot of people, we knew it was personal. We knew it was going to be somebody close. So, you know, you just have to look at that. I've talked a little bit about him, but we'll do a deep, deep dive on him, Sherry. Thank you. I don't think so. Holly says, I don't think it's about money. I think it's more personal than that. And I agree with you. I think it is about, it was about money and torture of the family. I've said that pretty much from the beginning, but I truly think that money and a kidnapping was the hopeful goal of whoever did this. I think that was their original goal. And like I said, it just went to heck. Let's see. But I agree with the personal component. Let's see. Not attuned, or they weren't going to return her, leaving the family in pain indefinitely. Yeah, I agree. There was no chance that, I don't think they abducted her thinking we can just keep her alive forever and that we're going to get $6 million and return her. I really don't know. I mean, with proof of life, could they have come up with the $6 million? She's worth 40. We all know what that means. Net worth is so different. That's your properties, your investments, And some are more liquid than others, and some are certainly very difficult to get your hands on. Could they have gotten the $6 million in the couple of days they were given? Remember, they weren't given very long to come up with that money. So I will always believe that that was something just to put out there on media to show they were in charge and to hurt the family. And so I agree. It's definite. It's pain indefinitely. And like I said, I would not be surprised if those latter six messages that were sent in the same fashion, asking for Bitcoin, sent to media, sent to be large and in charge. They have not said that those notes, only the first two notes, were from the abductors. I truly understand that. But if we know anything, we know that they don't know. We know that they're saying the first two notes they believe to be related to the family for the simple reason that they had specific information about her clothing, about the floodlight, about what was on her nightstand, things along this line. And that's why law enforcement said, listen, this is related. We're following through with it appropriately with getting the family up on the stage, reaching out to make comments and to try to get these abductors to come forward. So there's no doubt in my mind that the first two notes, based on all we know, are legitimately from the abductors. But law enforcement, despite having six emails, has absolutely no link to who sent them. They can't figure it out from the server of the media companies. I have really tried to let that sink in. It's shocking. It's shocking. And we know the best in the best in our digital forensics folks are trying to figure out an IP address. I've talked in great detail how somebody could send an email and it go undetected. Talked in great detail about that. And apparently these abductors knew how to do that. But I am not discounting that the last set of letters and that first set of letters aren't related. I just think they could be because they use the same modus operandi. It's clear to me that they're so modus operandi is how you conduct a crime. Motive is why you conduct a crime. They seem to have the same motive. They're tormenting this family. They ask for Bitcoin, just like the first two notes. They're using TMZ, just like the first notes. When you add that all together, if you're going to say the first two notes are related, and law enforcement believes that, we know that, Savannah believes that, we know that. If you're going to say those first two notes are related, what tells you that the last aren't? What? Nothing, because they don't have the IP address. So I'm just saying, there's more clues that lend itself that those last are related to the first two than aren't related. There's more. Until they have an IP address, and I know the Bitcoins are different. I know that. Until they have an IP address, they can't unequivocally say there is no relation. And think about that. A note came in the day, two notes came in the day Savannah turned to work. How does it get any more ugly than that, everyone? How does it get any more absolutely hurtful to this family? You take her, likely she's dead, and then you just torment this family. I think they're online. All right. Thank you, Diane. Danielle. I love all these. It's Diane. Sorry. I'm reading all these letters together. It looks like Diane Lejewski, 8650. I love you using all the emojis. Listen, I tell you, the mods spent a long time. really many days and got many people involved to make kind of cool ways to express yourself, even if you're one that doesn't necessarily come on and want to, you know, say something, but you want to express what you're thinking or feeling or just the support. You know, that's why I love to look up and I see these emojis and they're pretty cool. Let's see. Okay, Rosemary says, if it's about money, then look at the family. So, and we've talked a lot about this, but again, I'm going to, every single comment up here, I'm going to go through in this 30 more minutes we have left and address each one from my perspective. And of course, based on all the facts known and everything I know from my past law enforcement experience in cases and kidnapping cases. Listen, I would look at the family so long and hard. They would be the first people I looked at. That number one thing I do, you've got to look at the family. There's not one case I worked with a missing and abducted that I didn't start with the family. This is the rub. That's been done. The FBI and law enforcement, the FBI has been involved since about day three. They've looked at the family. And they issued a statement. They unequivocally aren't involved. And I know people want to say, well, that just came from Nanos. But when you're working a joint case like this, that just doesn't happen. And I'm giving this to you straight from behind the curtain. The FBI was behind that statement. Maybe not the emotionality that anybody who is blaming the family still is cruel. I think that that was more of a personal touch that Nanos put on it. But the fact that they were going to clear the family, that 100% was backed 1,000% by the FBI. So they've looked at them, they've cleared them. And Savannah didn't need any of her money. I believe that Savannah was helping subsidize her. Obviously the house was paid off. It was bought 50 years ago. She was on a fixed income. You know, she didn't have a husband and hadn't had a husband since, I believe, 1988 was when he died of a heart attack in Sonora, Mexico. She was on a very limited income and raised these kids to be absolutely amazing, despite their limited means. I'm sure, I would hope they had a life insurance policy that helped her end up paying for this house. She's never moved. She didn't live extravagantly. You know, she lived, it seems, well within her means. The family didn't use their money to hire a nurse and look after her. They didn't use their money to put her in a nursing home. No. Why? Because her family wanted her to be in the home she wanted to be in. That reminded her, Nancy, of her husband. Remember, she never even went on to marry. That reminded her of raising her kids. Tommaso and Annie looked after her. Remember, she wasn't an invalid, everybody. I just want everybody to know who doesn't. She wasn't in her bed and reliant upon depends and with a breathing tube and suffering from Alzheimer's or some other mental issue. She was vibrant. She had walking issues based, Savannah said, in large part on terrible back pain. You know, she walked with a cane, but she could walk. Savannah said she can make it to the mailbox. Not all the time, but she could walk. She could get, she drove everyone. She drove herself. That night, she didn't drive herself because it's at night. She didn't want to drive back and forth at night. So, which I think we'll see how it comes up. This is where I believe, as opposed to the facts, we know this night, the facts are an Uber took her to Annie's, which probably cost all of $5. You know, it's 4 miles away. Drove her there because why? Because Annie and Tommaso were cooking and getting everything ready for their Saturday night dinner, followed by Mahjong. They have a son there. And then who drove her home that night? By the way, I can't believe mainstream media still has this wrong. Tommaso drove her home. She didn't go in an Uber. I just read this morning where they had it wrong. Anyway, Tommaso drives her home and drops her off, makes sure she gets into her garage. She goes into the garage and enters the house. They took care of her, everyone. Can that be somewhat taxing? Anybody who's cared for their loved one knows you do it as a labor of love. Somebody you love, somebody who took care of you and changed your diapers. And they didn't. She didn't even require that much. Couple of rides. She drove herself to her, church meetings. She was so sufficient. And she loved being in her house. They didn't need any money. You can go look. The Tommaso and Annie are worth well over $1 million. Probably their net worth, probably in large part based on their home. I looked at the tax rolls. I need to look back because May 1st was when it went delinquent, but their taxes were $4,000. They had paid half clear back on October 2025, and then they had till the 1st to pay the other without being delinquent. I need to go back on the tax rolls and look. It's $2,000, everyone. He's a teacher. She's a teacher, meaning Annie. He's a teacher and has been teaching for 15 years in the same charter school with not any, I can't find anything negative about him. A grunge band. If you consider that negative, I don't. That's an expression of singing. I'm so jealous of people who can sing and play instruments. It's never a talent I was given. So, no, they loved her. There's just zero information out there that they didn't. And they didn't need money, Rosemary. But I hopefully, answered that for you. Cameron, he's worth over $2 million. Lived in Vermont. I don't think it's about money. And I've talked about this before. Smother her. No one would have known. There's no way to show that in the autopsy. Put in just a crystal of arsenic, which you can get in any store. Open up that capsule, throw that in, close it up. And if they even did an autopsy, because it would have showed likely a heart attack, they just would have assumed it was from the heart condition. If they even did an autopsy. And if they did, you have to specifically request arsenic to be looked at. And I doubt they would have done that. And there's many other compounds out there. So many other ways if you really think you're trying to get to her money. Just nothing there. All right. That's my opinion, but I do appreciate, Rosemary, you being on here and your question, because I think all these questions are important. Is there a new statement from the Guthrie family? Rowan 2U380 asks, unfortunately, no, I have not seen any new statements from the Guthrie family. I look every day. There's no new statements from the Guthrie family. And that has a lot of people infuriated and a lot of people that want to think they're involved because they don't talk. Where's the crying? Where's the Gabby Petito effect, right? Where for weeks that family was in front of the cameras, so heartfelt in their advocacy for their daughter. That is not the approach this family is taking. You can't expect Annie to be in front anywhere, and you can't expect Tommaso. I mean, look, they have had a target on them, and there is no way they're going to come out in the public to talk about all this, no matter what they say. They'll say, oh, see the eyes? Oh, see the mannerism, see how that facial expression, oh, they're guilty, they're guilty. There's zero upside. If I were their attorney or if I were their consultant, and believe me, they have them. Savannah is making sure they have coverage in this way. If they can't afford it themselves, they are a united front. They've come out and said that. We are united, the whole entirety of the family. So there's no way anyone who is worth their salt would ever recommend to Tommaso and Annie to come out and make a statement. No chance, everyone. That's not happening. And even when we've seen Cameron, Savannah, they always say it's from the Guthrie family, to their credit. They're unified. Savannah is the only one I think we will ever hear from. And no, I have heard, seen, there's nothing. And I look every day. All right, let me see. Let me just keep going down. These are such good comments. I really appreciate everybody's comments. I'm going to let Simba out. Everybody knows I have my little Simba and he's staring at me right by the door. Like, mommy, please let me out. So I'm going to let him out really short. Does anybody else have a dog who sunbathes? It's that the sun really isn't out bright yet, but he has all these holes, which thankfully he does them under my bushes, so I can't really see him, where he buries all these bones. And so he loves to go outside. It's like his little playground. And then about 2 hours a day, he just lays on the stoop and sunbathes. Even if it's 90 degrees, it's so funny. All right, back to the task at hand. The question from Karen is, Karen Alberini 714. Sorry, there's some typing over top of that. Why did the perp not reach out to Savannah personally like most kidnappers? If for torturing Savannah, why not contact? This is so baffling. This is a really good question, because no one in our industry who, and I don't know of the people that are talking heads. I don't know how many others have been involved in kidnappings. I don't know who worked violent crime. I could tell you I did and I have. So nothing exactly like this, that's for sure. But I can tell you personally, not from studying, but from living it, that it doesn't make any sense. If you want money, you reach out to the family and you do it right after the abduction. You have to do it that way, because if not, you're not going to get paid. You want to do it right after the abduction. You can even leave a note behind, because you know family is going to go in there. If you've done any research, you know it's going to be Annie and Tommaso that go to find that note. You reach out for them before law enforcement's involved. There was a huge window there, huge window between 2:28 in the morning and between noon, you know, when law enforcement was involved. There's a huge window, everyone. And they didn't. I think they didn't in large part because she was deceased, everyone. She was gone. They had no bargaining chip. So without a bargaining chip, what do? You still reach out. Maybe you'll get something. But that's why I say this is way deeper than just money, Karen. This is personal. And I think they're really enjoying this. And there has been some contact, right? We know the first two letters. And like I said, no one knows that those last six aren't involved for two reasons. They haven't been able to trace the addresses. If they had traced the addresses on the last six, we would have seen an arrest, just like we saw with Kalela, the guy that sent the personal text messages to Tommaso and to Annie. Remember that? Nobody's been arrested in this deal. That's why I have been saying, tickle the wire. See if it can be traced. I guess law enforcement must think they are just so sophisticated that it's not going to help. All right. Let's keep going. Karen Cardwell, thank you, Jen, for all your attention to this case. Absolutely. We all want our moms to be able to sleep in their beds, in their homes of 50 years without being taken. And then to have a case unsolved. Okay, Rosemary says, Nancy's son seems weird. None of the family search Sophia inside job. I mean, you're not alone, Rosemary. A lot of people believe that. I did a show yesterday, and I hope you have time to watch. But he's really not weird. This is a guy who served his country for 26 years as an F-16 fighter pilot. It takes a lot of intelligence and a lot of studying and a lot of commitment to be a fighter pilot. He worked again for the Vermont National Guard, but again, gave service to our country. He has two girls, lives up in Vermont quietly. He's not an upstage guy. And I talked about how people in the military, specifically people in the military, people in law enforcement, they don't want to be in front of the camera. I know I've talked to you about my journey. Listen, I was just dumb, fat, and happy doing my expert cases on the couch when I got the call from an FBI agent, close friend of mine, who said, listen, Gabby Petito has gone missing. Would you go down and meet this reporter and sit outside of Brian Laundrie's house with him and give your, you know, your expertise on the case, on what these clues are looking like? I'm like, ugh, I'm behind the camera. I'll never forget all these interviews where I'm being interviewed. If you watch the very first ones, I'm like, yes, no, I give no, because it's hard to undo 28 years of being told, don't ever say anything about what we do here in law enforcement. And even now, and I think many of my comrades are the same, I still remain guarded. I look up before different shows, for instance, when I've talked about working nuclear counterproliferation with WMD back at headquarters as a supervisor, I talk about that, but I look up before what I can say, for instance, about flaps and seals and, you know, those inner changes and just other things. What can I say and what am I limited by with top secret clearance? So I'm very careful on all of that. And I can tell you that Cameron Guthrie, he's not a talker. He doesn't want to be in front of the camera. We saw that yesterday. We reviewed what he had to say. I think he's absolutely heartbroken, just like the rest of the family. But he's a manly man. He's not reacting like some people think he should. They think he should be out there leading search teams and everything, but he's the sort, and I could tell you this is law enforcement too, people are who are in the military and paramilitary mindset, we believe to trust in the system. We believe to trust in authority. Remember, Nano said on day two, we've cut, and I'm going to do a show on this, but I have a specialist that I'm waiting for him to be ready. And then I'm going to do a show about the searches. But Nano's called it. And I think he's being respectful of that because he respects authority. He's in the military 26 years. So, Rose, I don't think he's weird. I think he's reserved. I think he hates the limelight. I think he's sick. I think he's hurt. And I think he trusts law enforcement and the FBI to do their job. And he certainly isn't going to be jumping up in front of the limelight, leading any searches or leading the charge in social media. That's not his MO. That's not the kind of guy an F-16 fighter pilot is. And that's not a guy he's shown us to be. He got in front of that camera the first time, didn't say a word. Got in front of the camera the second time and was very businesslike and said, listen, show us proof she's alive. We're ready to pay. Contact us. We don't know how to contact you. It didn't work, but he tried. Hi, Daniello. Thanks for being here. Let's see. I can see you smile, which I absolutely love that. No, I did not watch the interview room last night. I have private conversations with a lot of these individuals, and I don't particularly watch that show. Not saying anything detracting against it. But the other thing is, I know I've shared with many of you, I teach. I have six of very full-time in the expert witness arena. I work for News Nation. I have this show that I'm constantly working on and preparing for and scrubbing. But if there is anything in particular that you wanted to ask about, maybe something that was said, I'm certainly happy to comment on it. I know those guys are working hard on this case too, and that's always good. Rosemary's from Ohio. Hello from Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. I have to tell you, I've been to Canada several times. I went to Calgary. That city just amazed me. It's the cleanest city. I felt like I could eat dinner off the sidewalks. That's what I think of when I think of Canada, Victoria Island, Vancouver. Just maybe it was just where I was, but I just see them as such clean and beautiful cities. And then there's several people that are on Twitter that are from Canada, and one I've got to know very well. That we talk, behind the scenes, and just lovely, lovely people. Of course, Ashley Banfield is Canadian. She has a big footprint on this case, and so know her very well. She's lovely as well. All right. Holly Lark says, I think by making the communications public, the perpetrator not only hurt Savannah, but humiliated her as well. It's very personal. I totally agree with that. This was humiliating because many blame the Guthrie family for not paying that ransom. They say, listen, you're worth 40 million. Put out something there, something. And of course, I told you a long time ago, in our country, the Bureau isn't going to support that without proof of life. I'm saying there's so much money available. You never know what can be put in place in advance of doing something on an account that could lead you someplace. If you get where I'm going with this, I just don't get it. All right. Karen says, thank you, Jen. Thank you, Karen. Why didn't the family search? So, just by way of history with this case, if you remember, day one is Sunday. We have this press conference. And then on day two, there are ransom notes that become known to law enforcement, not to us initially, right? Because they are sent to local Tucson outlets that don't let the information out. Then what happens? Then they send them to TMZ and everything blows up because now publicly, we know not only that there were ransom notes sent, but Levin gives us a pretty good idea of some of the details in there, that there's deadlines, that they describe things in specificity, that law enforcement believes they're real, blah, blah, blah. So that's when the case really explodes. So just imagine you find this out. You've got a son that's in Vermont. You've got Savannah, who was supposed to be headed to the Olympics the next day, I believe. She's got a family. She's got children. She has a husband. She has a job. You have Annie and Tommaso, who live there, who are all over it. And by all accounts, according to Nanos, they searched before anybody searched. They searched, they were calling, you know, they thought it was a medical issue. Maybe somebody came because those doors were open and got them out on a stretcher and took them out. They were all over it. You know, they were certainly on top of it. So they did search. But I think your greater question is, why didn't they conduct a search? I don't know if you remember what this guy had to say. I don't have the clip right here, but I've played it before. No more searches on day two. And that's because he knew about the ransom notes. So on day two, he knows about the ransom notes from the two affiliates. Remember, TMZ gets them 12 hours later because the abductors are teed off that the local outlets didn't throw this out there for everybody to gnaw on and for everybody to go crazy about. So they're like, all right, we'll go to TMZ. They have a huge audience that's focused on celebrities and on true crime. Perfect. We'll go to them. And what did he do on day two? No more searches. We're going to be more focused. Remember, by then there had already been a lot of searching done. That's important to say. There was a lot of searching done. But we know in these searches, I'm just going to give you examples that you all know about. Brian Laundry, 5 weeks, never found. His family went right to where he was, which I'll say again, I think that was his assisted suicide. I haven't quelled my belief on that. They went straight to him. Nobody can find him. Five weeks in every law enforcement gizmo and gadget and boat and that you have. His car parked right there. Nobody can find it. But boy, that family can rock right to him the minute that reserve was open. If you look at Travis, the guy that killed three of his little girls, took them out into the woods, killed them all, plastic bags. It was horrible, horrible, horrible. Suffocated them. They looked for him for months. Guess where they found him when they did one last search again and decided to do a really good grid search instead of a half, you know what, grid search. They found him a mile away. Oh my gosh, he was right there. They missed him because grid searches are so hard. You have to kind of crawl over this and leap over that. You've got standing water and you don't have enough people and you have to be straight in a line, but you have obstacles. So you walk all the way around and all the way back and you miss things. They still can't find the other Travis that's the took his rifle after it was discovered he was having the coach was having an affair with a minor. They still haven't found him. Took 6+ years to find the Olympic Park shooter. Listen, every SWAT team in the FBI and many local SWAT teams, we were up there searching for him for years. Never found it. He finally came walking down to forage food and somebody found it. I 100% agree that searches need to continue. And now we're 90 days out. And in these desert conditions, to me, I know it was taken for ransom, but even if you know somebody is taken for ransom, it doesn't mean that they couldn't have been thrown out in the Sonora Desert, which is where she lived. That's what normally happens. And if you look at what law enforcement did with the sniffer and everything else, they were right there. It's not like they were convened over Mexico. In fact, Mexican authorities said they weren't even contacted. I'm just telling you what Mexican authorities said. Man, I don't want to say anything negative. Okay, I'll move on. Patty, M5P. I'm used to seeing MP5. That's a submachine gun we shot for years on the team. But Patty, M5P says, I agree to perps, but do you think only one now? Only one can keep a secret. Porch guy's probably dead. It's interesting. If you look several episodes ago, I talked about that I think it's possible he was disintegrated. Now remember, my good friend Max, she thinks it's only Porch Guy. She doesn't think there's two. What lured me away from that was the what I believe to be not a scanner, no way, but a handy talkie. Either a handy talkie, it could possibly be a device used to overhear if police are coming, scanner, it's possible. But that's what led me to believe too. Well, that and just experience with something like this that you always have more. I can't think of a case where you just have one person. Not one like this, not in modern times, no. But that doesn't mean Mac's wrong. I still understand where she's coming from. She's an Occam's razor girl. Why didn't we ever see the other individual on camera? I think there is, if there's two involved, and Porch Guy was the mope, was the, you know, doer, and not close to the other individual, I think that could be possible. But I don't know. This just seems... Porch Guy's just so comfortable. There just seems to be some sort of familiarity with him. But can't be ruled out. Let's see. Do you think a woman could have orchestrated this? This is from Fordu. Somebody who maybe crossed paths with Nancy in healthcare and she had one or more loyal men carry it out. Absolutely. I mean, if we know anything in these times, it is that definitely a woman could be responsible for this. We've talked about some different issues, right? Nancy was not politically neutral. Some people are politically neutral. If Nancy would have been politically neutral, I would have said, listen, she's politically neutral. Likely that isn't an issue. She's not politically neutral. She's very, very politically left. That has to at least be considered. But I think with everything being said about Savannah truly being the, I don't want to call it the impetus, but the, you know, her money, the fame, the, you know, fact she was on the Today Show, all those shows they did going back to Tucson and everything that was just opened wide up for the public to know about this family, the fact that they saw inside her house, the fact she talked about everything with her mom, for that being the conduit, I just think it is. And so I think when we look at that, that Savannah's money and her fame led to whoever did this, I don't know, the inspiration isn't the right word, but the right word is just the notoriety sort of leading to this. And definitely a woman could be behind it for Deuce. Women can be very, very evil, just like men. Good morning, Jen and everyone from Cynthia Drew. He cheated once. I'm not sure who you mean by he. I can see you smile if you can elaborate. I'll definitely put that up. Oh gosh, we're running short on time. For Deuce, also Porch Guy gloves look like extended cuff or operating room gloves, very rare, even any other healthcare setting. Yeah, those gloves, I really think he has a pair under the gloves, and I think those gloves on his hands are just too big. Do I have one of my Porch Guy pictures in my studio today? Bad girl. I don't have it in my studio, but they are very unique. They're very large. I need to dial down on those gloves more. Rosemary says Nanos messed it up purposefully. You know, we've heard a lot from people who really hate Nanos. They don't like him. They've gone after him. And they've all said that they think it's incompetence. I've never heard anybody say that they think he did it purposefully. So I don't have any basis to believe that. But a lot of mistakes. But according to even people who are his naysayers, they say it's based on incompetence. Okay, one last one for today from Karen Cardwell, and then I may continue with this tomorrow. Mods, if you don't mind, and I know you probably already did, jotting down a few of these, you can jot them all down, but that there might be too many here in comments. I'm only at the top of the comments. I haven't even got to the bottom. I'd like to continue with this tomorrow. Obviously, I'll do a scrub and make sure there's nothing new. But I'd like to continue with this. As I always say, it's everybody out there that's going to be in on a jury. And you are the people that, you know, follow these cases and have such good insights. So I love to hear from you. Karen Cardwell asks, do you think the fact that Ellie, FBI, and the family aren't talking or releasing information is intended to get the perpetrator in hopes that he will make a misstep. You know, I truly believe the reason that law enforcement isn't talking is because this is, for the most part, headed by the FBI. The FBI just does not talk. We have seen a recent release statement about that hair, which I was actually kind of surprised about. I do believe that definitely them keeping quiet is, they believe they don't have anything that they need from the public where they are in the investigation. It's not to be rude, but the FBI just does not care about online sleuthing. They'll look at it, they'll scrub it. But what I mean is they don't care what anybody thinks about the FBI and the job they're doing. They just really don't. They're fast. They're doing their job. But what they should be doing is definitely scrubbing social media to make sure this perpetrator/perpetrators aren't out there and aren't spinning the narrative away from them. I think they, you know, law enforcement needs to look at that. But for the most part, I think they're being quiet because that is the MO of the FBI. I think Nanos really isn't being quiet. I mean, he every couple of weeks comes out and says something. Like I said, people called him. He decided to say something, but really said nothing. So nothing new there. And I think the missteps of the perpetrator will come based on time or on the perpetrator's teeing off somebody close to them that knows what they've done. I can't tell you how many cases we get solved in just that way. The individuals who do the wrongdoing are in a relationship, and then something goes awry with the relationship, and the scorned person comes forward and breaks the whole case open. I think that could happen here. I'm going to answer one more. Let's see. Okay, sorry. I thought I saw one more. I saw one more here. Honest question. What about the homicide cases? What about the homicide cases have been compromised before, Nancy? Oh, that's such an interesting question, isn't it? You know, I've got to tell you, though, Pima County has an amazing clearance rate. They really do. Robin Drake, my friend, former FBI, behavioral analysis unit in the counterterrorism unit, basically focused on getting people to turn on their countries and spy for us. He did a whole breakdown because he works a lot with numbers and he loves doing sort of statistical analysis. And he talked about how their clearance rate was really good. I think they've had very few homicides. I thought it was 12 or 16. It was a very low number. I think he looked at 1 year. But nevertheless, he said that their clearance rate was through the roof, you know, very high, like 90% or something like that. Very high clearance rate. And so, but I think what your point is yeah, maybe they were cleared, but were they cleared correctly? And then, of course, there's the ones that weren't cleared. Were there missteps in those? And is that why they haven't made any arrests? Also, keep in mind here, they put a rookie with 6 months investigative experience in terms of being a detective in charge of Nancy Guthrie's case. I don't think we can overlook that. And why, I think that's a big answer to our questions as to how this could have been messed up. Listen, everyone, I'm keeping the faith in the FBI, in the task force, in the good, hardworking folks with Pima County, that we'll have an answer. I'm keeping the faith. All right, everyone, till next time, may justice be served. And tomorrow we'll continue with this. I know I didn't even get through half of these questions. So tomorrow we'll continue. Tomorrow is Wednesday. It's Thursday that I've got to do a different start time. It'll probably be a pretty early start time. I'm planning on starting on, I know this is early, 8 o'clock. I know that's really early for our West Coasters. I'm so sorry, but Thursday will be 8 o'clock start time. Tomorrow will be our normal 10. I apologize for anybody who received the 11 o'clock start. I think it went 10, 11 and back and forth. I'm not sure exactly how that happened, but I thank you all for being here. I appreciate it. And I know the Guthrie family does too. Until next time, may justice be served for Nancy Guthrie and for all the missing.